This is Colin Dixon with Endscreen Media, and I have a special edition of Endscreen Noise today. I've invited my friend Steve Hawley, who is founder and managing director of Piracy Monitor, to join me for an interview today. Steve, welcome. I'm glad we can work together on this little project.
And me too. Thank you for inviting me.
And we decided to get together because Steve introduced me to a very interesting company called Muzo, and we have Andy Chatterley, who is the CEO and founder of Muzo, with us. Very happy to welcome you. Thanks for joining us, Andy.
Hi, good to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me.
And Steve, so tell us why you introduced me to Muzo, and then we'll get Andy into the conversation.
Sure, glad to. Well, you know, Colin and I have known each other for quite a long time, and I know his focus is about analytics and advertising and basically building an audience and building opportunity. I've taken on a focus about the other side of the analytics coin, if you will, and that's loss prevention. And I've seen things from Muzo for about the last 6 months or so, and I thought it was a really compelling story because in a way they do both. You know, they both identify the loss and the theft of content and services and so forth, but they also identify opportunity. And I thought, gee, Colin should know this guy. So here we are. So Andy, I know when we first met, and we haven't met face-to-face yet, I'm looking forward to that, but when we first met here in Zoom, you told me a story about, like a personal story about loss of intellectual property, if you will, by your wife's music being stolen. Tell us that story and what you've been doing about it.
Absolutely. Thanks very much, Stephen. Well, Muzo started about a decade ago, actually, and the reason that the company started was exactly as you say. It was to deal with the issue of piracy that we had from my wife's album. So prior to starting Muzo, I was a record producer for my sins, and my wife is a recording artist, still is a recording artist today. And when her third album came out, it leaked to piracy. So we were going for quite a high chart position in the UK, and about 7 to 10 days before the official release date, suddenly her fans alerted us of links on piracy websites. So, you know, like many, many other people in the music industry, you sort of panic and go about trying to discover where the links are, what it means, how many people are getting them, how did this possibly happen? And at the time, I turned to various bodies and companies around the music industry to try and find a solution. Who could help me deal with this problem of piracy? And it wasn't the greatest experience. And so as a consequence, myself and the co-founders built what was the first iteration of our Muzo Protect product that went out into piracy domains, into the piracy ecosystem, and crawled for content. And, you know, after the initial leak of my wife's album, we built this out for maybe 9-10 months, the initial crawling system, and tested it out. And it worked really effectively. You know, we discovered that by understanding where the sites were, we could look for music albums at the time, discover them, find them, bring them back into our SaaS dashboard, and because of the DMCA law and the nature of takedowns, remove the content and ask for that content to be taken down. And so we you know, just to sort of get you up to speed with where we are today from that point in time, we built it out, we sold it to the music industry. It became pretty successful and pretty helpful for those record labels, especially the independent sector, to protect their content. And then we moved out from musical, we spread out to other media sectors. So now we do protect content for film, recorded television, music, software, and publishing and ebooks. But probably more importantly, and where it meets with Colin, is we built out quite a large data analytics platform that really starts to look at audience measurement and how we can leverage the value in the piracy audience while still protecting content to make more revenue and create more opportunities for our customers. And so, you know, that's where Muzo Discover and Muzo Connect, which is the audience activation piece, really come into play.
So the audience that you've uncovered, we tend to think of pirates as pirates, right? We really don't give them any dimensionality or any personality. They're certainly not all the same, right?
You're so right. It's exactly. In fact, you probably hit upon the biggest issue that we have. And when we speak about the piracy audience, there's this kind of preconception that it's, I don't know, you know, 17, 18 year old boys, males, who are in their bedroom, wearing in their underwear, possibly downloading content to hard drives. And, you know, the reality is when we look at the data, and bearing in mind Musos Discover platform tracked, I mean, I think it's 135 billion visits to piracy sites last year in 2020. 2021 over the first 3 months so far, we're almost at 40 billion. So we're seeing an uptick over the first 3 months of this year compared to last year. But when we dig into the data and look at the demographics, it's a complete wide range of demographics, and it's really content driven. So you find it's, you know, it's similar, not the same, but it's similar to licensed channels. It's just happening in piracy. And I think this is probably the key point that what we've realized on the data analytics side, especially for film and TV, is in some ways the piracy ecosystem is arguably the largest video on demand platform that there is. And as a consequence, you've got sports fans, people who like, you know, rom-coms or emotional dramas, as much as you've got horror fans or, you know, any type of genre is served on that platform.
So I'm curious, we're actually both curious, is you've got a database that takes 135 billion samples and so forth. How did this database get built? You know, what are your sources? I imagine you didn't just go to Reddit and look for, you know, Reddit threads that had lists of pirate sites on them. It must have been more scientific than that.
I wouldn't say necessarily scientific, but it was a consequence of doing business protecting content for a decade, or actually for 5 years when we really started to build out our analytics platform, because, you know, we were protecting content for, well, certainly in the music industry, for some of the largest music releases and some of the largest albums that were being released. So we were cataloging, classifying piracy websites as we go. So this is a torrent site, this is a cyberlock site, this is a referring site, and so on and so forth. So at our core, where probably the value of our technology really lies, is this large database of the piracy ecosystem. And so that drives all of our products, actually, but it drives our data product in order to understand where to look for content and how to find that content. And our data looks at the methods of piracy delivery, so how people consume content. And that's changed dramatically over the past number of years, tends to mimic the real world. So just to throw a stat up, for example, in TV piracy, 93% of TV piracy is via unlicensed streaming sites, which is, you know, huge, because people still think of piracy as torrents and cyber lockers. And, you know, when you can track it down to those kind of percentages, it becomes really interesting. On film, it's 58%. So 58% is via unlicensed streaming sites. And, you know, it's just to answer your question, sorry, it's really about building up that knowledge of the ecosystem. And then we overlay various different data sets and various different ways of analyzing consumption of the content.
So people are subscribing to streaming sites that are basically getting their content illegally. Is that the model?
No, it's just one-click access to streaming sites that are either making money from advertising to you, or, you know, possibly mining your computer for cryptocurrencies, who knows. But, you know, essentially it's just free streaming sites where you click all apps, you know. One of the really famous ones, which I won't mention by name for the sake of giving you advertisement, but, you know, it's an app that you download that has a very, very similar user interface that you might experience with any of the licensed platforms, but everything's available. The issue, I suppose, with piracy, or not the issue, but the difference, is that every bit of content is available, and it's available where there's no licensing restrictions, and it's free. And we recently did a little bit of analysis around the Oscars, and, you know, what was really interesting at that point was Promising Young Woman. Look, I'm in England, so looking at the UK audience. Promising Young Woman at that time wasn't available in the UK. It subsequently is now available as of last weekend. But when we looked at the data, you couldn't get it here. But you could get it here. You just had to go onto Google and find a piracy site that was making it available. So you know, when you've got licensing restrictions based on the release strategies of certain films, then it's going to drive piracy. And because the exclusive nature of platforms, of video on demand platforms, means that, you know, there's this exclusive content that only sits on one platform, and piracy again, you know, makes that more available to a wider audience should they decide that that's where they want to go and find it.
I had kind of a geeky question here. It occurs to me that you haven't mentioned the, I don't know, I guess the expected anti-piracy techniques, you know, like watermarking and monitoring and so forth. You hear about that. You hear about password theft, credential stuffing, all of these, you know, there are various countermeasures that seem to have the public eye right now, and you haven't mentioned any of those. So do you have anything like that in the platform, or how do you not use those things? How does your platform succeed without using those, if that's the case?
You're talking on the protection side as opposed to the data side, right, Stephen? So on, yeah.
Detection, of course, watermarking is put in place so you can detect.
I see. Yeah. So no, we do everything on metadata. So we're searching as if someone's searching for it via the metadata. Now on the protection side, we do use fingerprinting and watermarking depending on the campaign, but largely our system is built on metadata. So we use metadata to search because, you know, over the years we find it just brings back a much wider net and a much bigger net of content. The trick is in the matching, whether that's, you know, looking at torrent downloads or looking at visits via streaming sites. It's in really matching titles, and that's where, you know, the machine learning and the technology works well.
Is a lot of the viewing that you were seeing going on, and is that you seem to hint at it was driven by concurrence, by currency? So very recent shows that particularly recent shows that are not available in a particular region, they're obviously driving a lot of the access. So it's just simply that they can't get access through legal means. Is that right?
I think there's it's a really great question again, and I think there's a number of drivers for piracy that we see both in our data, but also when we've done panel data and sort of questionnaires amongst the audience. And it's access and cost. Those seem to be the key primary drivers. So yeah, it's not available in my territory. It's a new film, a new TV show. I really want to access it. I'll go and access it. And cost, you know, usually looks something like I've got platform one, I've got Netflix, but I don't have, you know, Sky or whatever other platform. I don't have HBO Max. So I can't afford, or I'm not prepared to pay for another platform. I've reached kind of peak subscription fatigue or whatever, you know, whatever it could be called. And then they'll find that on piracy. And often there's a kind of third category, and I'm not sure exactly whether this is sort of just an excuse or this is legitimate, but it's, I didn't know it was illegal. I searched on Google and I found the link and I saw it. And whilst I was there, I watched tons of other stuff as well. So a kind of accidental pirate.
I would submit that that's real. There's a lot of research out there that have been done by, well, in Asia Pacific, there's an anti-piracy group that's pretty active and they've done some research. Australia, they've done some research. And I think FACT in the UK has also done research about that. So yeah, that's very much a real thing.
Yeah. I'm sure it is.
So I want to know, we hinted at this at the beginning. You have an opportunity to maybe, for content providers, to maybe even monetize people that are watching illegally, right?
Absolutely. And this is, you know, it's really interesting. You know, I came at this from protecting my content, being a rights owner, having an issue, wanting to stamp it out and not lose the potential for revenue. And then after, you know, a decade of doing it, building up this platform, what I realized is the audience is so big, so vast, so interesting, and so nuanced that if you can understand it and you can measure it and you can action it, then you can create opportunity. Now, we're selling our platform to companies that use it for a number of cases, such as deciding what content to commission. So they, you know, a broadcaster in a European regional country, might use us to go, okay, well, this is interesting. Piracy is an early trend indicator, and the trend is pointing to, I don't know, you know, film noir with a romantic twist with a strong female lead kind of, you know, that's what it's looking like in their territory. So they are making certain decisions based on genres to commission. The same company I'm thinking of is also acquiring content from the data, because again, it's showing an audience demand where these films are not available or not readily available in their territory. So they're using it to say, okay, this film's really high in our territory in piracy. Piracy demand is really high. So it's not currently available in this territory. So let's go and acquire it. Let's go and buy it and bring it on the platform. Because as I said earlier, it's almost like the largest indicator of video on demand platform in the legal setting. So putting that to one side, there's various uses, I'm sure you can imagine, from informing anti-piracy strategies to selling your content or buying content or leveraging deals based on which way you look at it. We also take it one stage further, which is creating programmatic audiences anonymously for content. So for example, you know, if a platform was a sports platform, let's say selling premium sports via a video on demand platform, well, we might create them an audience of people who are watching Premiership matches or Premier League matches, I think it's called, isn't it? Not Premiership. It's about a decade old. Premier League matches online, on piracy, on unlicensed websites. So we'll create that audience. It's purely anonymized, but it's based on audience behaviors. And then we will, you know, use attribution modeling to expand the audiences out, create a lookalike audience that can be used in standard programmatic advertisement. So not advertising on piracy sites, not targeting individuals specifically, but using that demographic data and that profile to build, a programmatic audience that hopefully improves the cost of acquisition if you're trying to drive subscribers to your platform. And it works incredibly well, in improving those campaign metrics, because you're really looking, obviously there's going to be crossover from audiences, but you're really looking in it in a kind of large but niche area where no one else appears to be looking for these people as a grouped behavioral kind of process. So it's interesting. And one of the challenges I always had with the piracy thing is initially doing content protection, you're not creating value. You know, you're creating value by removing content. So there is a value add. There is an ROI one would hope by having very, very good content protection. But if you can combine that with value that you can bring to these companies, increase revenue that you can bring to these companies, then you're creating a complete new approach of content protection. It's about protecting content and adding revenue.
So both sides of the coin, it's fabulous.
Yeah, I think, you know, you Stephen, you know more than anybody, you know, we're 20 years into post-Napster, we're 2 decades into, I hate the expression whack-a-mole, I really do, because it's too binary, but there's a truth in it. You know, there's a truth in that element of protection. It's you fight these big battles or these huge court cases or these huge lobbying. And yeah, I'm not saying that we won't get to that point, but as of yet, you know, for me, looking at the data, the jury's still out. We see a site gets closed down, 1 million proxies open up, like a spreading virus bacteria, and people use VPNs to bypass the firewalls. You know, there's so many arguments for that kind of action, but also so much data that points to it not necessarily being effective. Yeah. And if we can use the data to make sure that we provide the best possible experience for the customer on licensed channels, then we can properly turn it around.
Yeah. So in the last minute, Andy, what's next for Muzo? We're not in a young 2021 anymore. It's now getting on a little bit long in the tooth. So where are we going this year and beyond that?
Yeah, I mean, God, world's changing pretty quickly, isn't it? I mean, that is certainly for sure. I think for us is that our main aim is to really get this data in front of as many people as possible and really highlight the value that we've got here. I think that the technology is moving so quickly with, you know, things like NFTs and other copyright issues that are going to be inherent in those, whether that's media, art, music, royalties, and all of those kind of things. If you're looking longer term, I think that's a whole area that's opening up in very, very interesting ways that will be really positive, but also have all kinds of legal ramifications of ownership and content. So I think that's one to watch. And, you know, for Mizo, I hope we can expand our client range and really get this data in front of as many people as possible and actually turn piracy and the problem of content protection into a real positive outcome for these companies.
Yeah, into an opportunity. Yeah, great. Great. Yeah. Well, Steve, I think we're pretty much done. Andy, thank you so much for joining Steve and I. It's been a fascinating conversation.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you very much for inviting me, guys. As always, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
This has been Colin Dixon with Endscreen Media.